Good morning, Arizona. My name is Sherry. Welcome to Law Matters. I want to remind everyone that Law Matters is a nonprofit whose mission is to close the communication gap between law enforcement and the communities they serve. For that reason, we are a live show. This gives you the opportunity to ask questions and get answers. You can call in at 520-790-2040 or email questions and show ideas to lawmatters1030@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. To learn more about Law Matters and support the mission, check out our website at lawmatters1030.org. And with that said, let's start the show. Before I introduce our guest today, I want to make a few announcements. The VA's Vet Center on 2525 East Broadway is going to have an open house on the 12th from 12 to 5. And if you have any needs, you're a vet, you know a vet, you're related to a vet, your neighbor's a vet, this is a place you want to go to. They've got all the information and all the resources to help anybody transition into a civilian life again. I also want to ask everybody to, what day is this? The 13th of June, there's going to be a fundraiser for one of our officers. Gary needs your help. And if you go to Village Inn on, I don't know what the address is, oh, 22nd and Harrison, if you go to Village Inn down there between 5 and 9 at night and take this flyer, which is posted on our website, 20% of the proceeds will go to help Gary. Gary's pretty sick and he needs some help. If you can't make it, go to GoFundMe and plug in Gary. The last name is H-A-W-C-O, and his GoFundMe page will pop up and you can donate that way as well. And lastly, if you go to Facebook and search Bark for the Blue, this website will help you, or help us, get equipment for our canines. And if everybody remembers in the news, Officer Blitz got stabbed while he was apprehending a bad guy. This effort is selling calendars. They're 18-month calendars, and the proceeds will go to buy equipment to help protect our dogs. And I think that's really needed and a worthy cause. Okay, our guests today are calling in, so you won't be able to call in because they're on the phone. We have Ellen Espinoza, and I appreciate you calling in from Texas. And we have Special Agent Miguel Clark. I want to start with Ellen. Ellen, tell me your title and what you do. We're going to talk about InfraGuard today.
Absolutely, yeah. So first of all, Sherry, thank you so much for having us on the show. Very much appreciate not only having us on the show, but also your support for law enforcement and support for our country. So I am with the InfraGuard National Members Alliance. I serve on the board of directors, specifically chair of the technology committee. And so InfraGuard is, in effect, a partnership between the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the private sector. And so InfraGuard National Members Alliance itself is a separate 501c3 organization that helps the partners with the FBI to help forward the mission of the FBI and of InfraGuard.
Okay, Michael, or Miguel, sorry. You're with the FBI. Tell me what your position is with InfraGuard.
I am a local InfraGuard coordinator out of the FBI Dallas office, and my role is to be the official liaison between the 503C InfraGuard chapter and the FBI. And the FBI's relationship to InfraGuard, one of the relationships that we have, is that FBI owns the trademark. And so our job is to help protect just kind of like the image, and then also smooth out certain complications that can arise between being in the private sector and being in the government, because we are bound by at least slightly different rules.
Okay. Are you on speakerphone?
No, ma'am, I'm not.
Okay. Because you're coming in really broken up. We can fix that. Ask the tech guy, he's on the other line, to fix that. Okay, how did this program start?
Sure,
Alan?
So the pro- yeah, No, absolutely. So the program started back in 1996 out of the Cleveland FBI field office. A number of the agents there saw the need to really collaborate with the private sector. So it really started with a few folks reaching out to CIOs and CEOs there in Cleveland and just kind of starting a conversation about how they would actually hold regular bilateral talks and communication with each other. You know, I think at the end of the day, the FBI and the federal government as a whole came to the realization that they just couldn't do it on their own. You know, they couldn't just help protect the critical infrastructure of the United States on their own. They really needed to partner with the private sector, because a lot of times the private sector sometimes has information that they don't, you know, or resources that they may not have. So it just really seemed like a great way of helping protect the critical infrastructure. So that was in 96. That started with a small group there in Cleveland. And that initiative grew, and it started specifically just as cyber. It was the cyber squad, and it was cyber-focused. And that was really just specifically how they the initial focus. And over time, really, in particular in 1998, that started to grow, and the word started to get out. The FBI adopted InfraGuard. And by the way, it's InfraGuard, InfraGuard. So a lot of times folks will spell it with a U in there because of the word guard, but we like to say in InfraGuard that we left the U out because we need you. So
there you go.
But the organization really sort of took off from there, quite frankly. The word started to get out, not only in the FBI, but in communities as well. And in 1998, the organization grew to include creating a separate 501c3 for InfraGuard National. So really looking with the forward-looking idea to expand beyond just Cleveland, beyond Ohio for that matter, and to really expand across the United States. And it was around that time as well that former President Clinton signed Presidential Directive 63, I think it was 21, that created new departments within federal agencies, among them a National Infrastructure Protection Center within the FBI.
So you've been with it for a while. You know the history. Has anything mm-hmm. with InfraGuard and their mission changed after 9/11?
Yeah, I would say that, again, while the focus was initially just very much cyber, especially after 9/11, the focus had already expanded prior to that, but the focus, really became more on the 16 critical infrastructure. So the Department of Homeland Security has outlined what they're calling the 16 critical infrastructures of the United States. So I won't go through all of them, but that's, communication, finance, healthcare, banking, et cetera. So InfraGuard's mission really, number one, it widened to be national. So it went from this great effort in Cleveland to absolutely being national, to the point now where we have 79 InfraGuard member alliances, or we also call them chapters, across the country. So each of these alliances are aligned with an FBI field office. So there are 56 FBI field offices. So each of those 79 collaborate directly with a field office. And I would say after 9/11, the focus really became on those 16 critical infrastructures and how to better engage, how to have that bilateral. So it's not just the government asking, the FBI or whoever else is asking for information, but also giving information. And I would say that's been probably the biggest shift that I've seen. I've been a member since 2002. And the biggest shift I've seen even throughout the years has been, not just the FBI saying, hey, how can you help us? But them saying, how can we help you? And disseminating more and more information to the private sector with the aim to help protect businesses. It's protecting the critical infrastructure, which at the end of the day, for us, private citizens, are businesses, typically.
The last meeting I went to, they were talking about if Target has a breach in their security system, somebody's hacking in and getting all this information, sitting there and being quiet about it doesn't help anybody. If you tell people it's happening, other organizations, other companies are going to be aware of what's going on and be able to better protect themselves and us as citizens. And I think that's pretty remarkable. Michael, you're with FBI. How does this help the FBI?
It helps us in a number of different ways. But before I tackle that, I'd like to add one more thing to the question about September 11th and what changed. I was with the FBI during that time period, and I was also associated with a brand new fledgling InfraGuard chapter in the Dallas area. And one of the most significant things for the FBI at that time during September 11th, in addition to undergoing and participating in the largest investigation we've ever been a part of, we were trying to figure out how do we better communicate with our partners. And so we wanted to really leverage that InfraGuard relationship that we had, again, brand new and very little in the way of support from that standpoint, to be able to communicate in a crisis situation. And what Dallas had developed out of that was an emergency response network to better communicate with law enforcement and private sector partners. And that network that was created out of the Dallas area went on to become the Homeland Security Information Network that's still in use today.
Wow.
So I just wanted to add that piece for you.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
That was an interesting part.
It is interesting.
And for us in the FBI, it is really important for us to have partnerships. And every day that goes by, we're better understanding that the partnerships are important for us. For example, if there is going to be any type of an attack or a cyber incident or something along those lines, it's really going to happen in private space, more so than public space. And it's essential for us, since we're responsible for protecting that space, for us to interact with those partners. So having those relationships in advance makes it a lot easier for us. The other thing, too, that is a benefit for us is not just having an ability for us to provide information to our partners that will help them protect themselves, but it's also an avenue for them to be able to report to us those areas that are of concern. Some of those areas of concern that will come in will be of emerging threats, things that we have maybe not seen or we haven't thought about, or we're not fully aware of how the technology will create vulnerabilities that we are just not in a position to be able to do anything about until we better understand the technology. And that partnership with the private sector allows for us to better understand that technology because they can educate us on the technologies that they develop, and then help us have a little bit more insight into what some of those vulnerabilities might be.
And help protect them.
Precisely.
Okay. So what are the organizations or companies or what makes up InfraGuard? Is it just companies or can individuals get involved? How does this work?
So for InfraGuard, the individual is the member. And so those individuals will, when they apply, hopefully will align with a particular critical infrastructure and say, this is where I'm interested or this is where I have, hopefully, an expertise and I'm willing to share information in order to be able to protect.
That makes sense. Alan, I'm just curious. When you got involved with this, was it basically companies? Because when I go to these meetings, I see all these different companies have like a representative. I'm in this industry, I'm in that industry. And when I got involved, I'm a loan officer, but I didn't represent that industry to InfraGuard. I was there basically to learn. When people come in and they specialize in different areas, how do you take advantage of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, if we go back to the question about individual versus company for a second. So yeah. Like Miguel mentioned, the InfraGuard membership is indeed the individual, right? You apply and you go through a security check with the FBI and such, and that is the individual. So we are working, InfraGuard National is working on hopefully developing a program where we could begin to bring in companies at some point. So that is something that's on our radar. The program, it attracts folks primarily because they're looking to, help their company. So even though it is the individual, but their focus is that they're wanting to gain that the access to that information that isn't public. It's not classified, but also not publicly available information that the FBI is sharing through various means with the individual. And so, you know, it forms a relationship, and I would say that the relationship goes beyond just the individual for sure. So to your point about companies, where you take someone, you know, like even the company I work for, because I do have, by the way, a day job outside of this other day job with InfraGuard. But, you know, I, as a representative of my company, being engaged with InfraGuard, you know, if there's information that I receive as an InfraGuard member that I think would benefit my company or various folks, stakeholders within, then, you know, depending on the protocol, I'm able to share that information and able to help better protect my company and what we do for, you know, as a business. You know, I'm really seeing what I see more than anything as I speak to InfraGuard members who have been, you know, very involved here in the North Texas chapter and now across the nation. What I see more and more of are, you know, folks coming in from, whether it's very large companies, we have, you know, Fortune 500 and such, where we have employees of those companies that are members of InfraGuard, all the way down to really sort of mom and pop shops to some degree, and those, especially the vendors. You know, we tend to think that you know, working with the bigger companies is where it's where it's at in terms of protecting the infrastructure. But the reality is that somebody makes a widget that a company like, let's say, Lockheed utilizes on a weapon system. You know, and so I'm seeing from all the way from the large company to from some of the largest ones in the country down to some of the smallest even contractors sign up for InfraGuard. At least have employees sign up for InfraGuard and begin to receive that information. When you become an InfraGuard member, you gain access to a secure portal that is maintained by the FBI. And it's through that portal that, number one, you can actually collaborate through forums on that portal with other InfraGuard members, which has turned out to be, I will say, of tremendous value. So not only is there value in the information the FBI is disseminating to the private sector, and vice versa, the private sector, you know, being able to feeling comfortable and having that partnership and relationship with the FBI and coming back to them and sharing. But there's also what we're seeing more and more are members sharing with each other, and a tremendous value coming from that. Members being, you know, sharing all sorts of information that other companies, you know, members of other companies may not be privy to, and helping them better protect their corporation and better protect the infrastructure.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back in a few.
You don't need to own a gun to make sure your children are trained and know what to do if they come across one. For the past 20 years, the folks at Diamondback have taught firearm safety and concealed weapon permit classes. Hi, I'm Ben Anderson, Director of Training at Diamondback Shooting Sports. Sign up for a class today at dbacktraining.com so you can be prepared for the unexpected. We're open 7 days a week, so stop in and introduce yourself. We're located in the Gaslight Plaza at the southwest corner of Broadway and Kolb on Tucson's east side.
Hi, it's me, Sherry. At Geneva Financial, we offer an array of loan products from commercial, construction, investor, all-in-one, a HEROES program for first responders as well as teachers, and of course, reverse mortgages. If you're shopping for a loan or know somebody who is, give me a call at 310-9900. We offer loans for humans by humans. So let's see what I can do for you. That's 310-9900. Thanks. I look forward to hearing from you.
If you think making false threats is a joke, think again. Any communication threatening students, teachers, and staff at schools or public places is a federal crime that could lock people behind prison doors for up to 5 years.
I'm FBI Deputy Director David Bowditch, making you aware that hoax threats have real consequences. We don't want to see a young person begin their adult lives with a felony record.
Making false threats is not a joke. Think before you post. Visit FBI.gov.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Ellen Espinoza, who's the National Board Director of InfraGuard, and FBI Special Agent Miguel Clark. I wanted to get back to you and find out what activities do members participate in besides sharing information on this website that you're referring to, and I've been on that website. Ellen. I keep forgetting to say Alan, Miguel. Alan.
That's okay. Yeah, I apologize. The sort of the hold music was playing in the background as you were speaking, so if you don't, would repeat.
Oh, I just wanted to find out what kind of activities, participation, the members from IFRGARD are allowed to be a part of. What activities do you do?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So I guess let me kind of lay the background for that a little bit. So IFRGARD currently at a national level has approximately over 60,000 members. And like I mentioned earlier, there are 79 IFRGARD member alliances or chapters, if you will. And so each, you know, at a national level, every member has access, like I mentioned, to the portal and that kind of information. On a more local level, which is really where the IFRGARD membership, you know, thrives and operates, is really in that partnership and relationship with their local FBI field office. There it kind of varies to some degree. Every chapter has its own personality, if you will, especially given, you know, the geographic diversity and the needs that are diverse as well. But generally speaking, at the core, the chapters hold meetings, typically at least quarterly meetings, where they'll sometimes be held at the FBI office or at other places, and they'll have speakers come in from the FBI and give pertinent, speak on pertinent topics, you know, trending topics and threats and such, and address those. Also, we partner with DHS, so we'll bring in DHS personnel as well to give briefings and such, and even private industry. So I could say, you know, being that I'm here in Dallas with the North Texas chapter, you know, the chapter has brought in really experts from all over the country at times to speak on a variety of topics. So the membership is, you know, of course, exposed to the information the FBI is providing, exposed to some private industry briefings and such that take place. And they have the opportunity to, again, collaborate with each other. There are some chapters that, given the size of the chapter, or you know, have a lot of events. I'll call out San Diego, for example. My friends there who do a tremendous job because they have a pretty large chapter and have a number of different events throughout the year. And some of the smaller ones that sometimes perhaps don't have those funds, but have put on some great programs as well and bring in some great speakers and such. So it kind of varies a bit by each chapter. They're also remiss to not mention that, you know, IFRGARD at the national level and some of the chapters as well, we have partnerships with, you know, certain organizations. Like, for example, we have an agreement with ASIS, a national security organization, and we do a conference with them every year. This year it's actually taking place in Chicago in early September. And we get discounts. We're able to give to a certain degree, provide discounts and for our membership. And certain benefits that they derive from that as well. So it's a number of events that happen both national level as well as local level.
Miguel, can you tell me what is the difference between a chapter and an alliance in regards to IFRGARD?
Well, I think Alan is probably better able to answer that question, but I will take a stab at it. I
mean, okay.
The chapter is really going to be more of a local nonprofit. And so those, like Alan had just said, have their own flavor. And, basically they're trying to cater to their member and their memberships because they're all going to be different depending on what resources or assets they may have in a particular area of responsibility.
Different
now, the member alliance, like the National Member Alliance, that is the organization that Alan is a part of. And you said that was in 2001 or 2002 when that formed?
98, actually.
98.
And it formed for what purpose? Why it's like a separate thing. Why did you do the National Alliance?
So, well, I wasn't there, just to clarify. But so the National Alliance was formed. So the FBI being a federal agency, they of course have certain, certain restrictions and boundaries within how they could operate, right? You know,
right.
they focus on the federal part and there's certain federal statutes and all that they have to follow. The separate nonprofit was formed to really, number one, help them, to really help the mission. That's really at the core of the purpose of the separate nonprofit, is to have this nonprofit that, you know, frankly, we could do some things that the FBI can't. I'll give you an example. You know, the FBI is not, they're not allowed to receive funds of any kind, right? And so us as a separate nonprofit, not just a national level, but the chapters as well, they're 501c3s also, they're able to take in funds to help the program, right? So, you know, we have, for example, a chapter may solicit sponsorship funds in order to hold meetings. So the meeting, rather than it being perhaps at the FBI office because, you know, there isn't enough room or whatnot, could be held somewhere else. Or if they want to bring in speakers at times that they may need to pay for, you know. So that's really the InfraGuard National Members Alliance, as well as the chapters and the alliances, all being 501c3s, really gives us the flexibility to kind of go out and do some of those things, create some of those partnerships, and in particular, raise funds and put on programs that perhaps the FBI doesn't have the flexibility to do. So we're able to do that in partnership and to support the mission with the FBI.
So Miguel, how does the FBI benefit from this program?
Well, for us, we have responsibilities to protect the infrastructure, number one. And the way that we do that is through the partnership that we have with the individuals and with the individual InfraGuard chapters. The other part for us is providing a platform for us to talk about different types of threats with the people who are going to benefit from having that information. Recently, we start to see the increase in active shooters. And yeah. So through an InfraGuard chapter, we have the ability to assist and provide training to the membership about active shooters, what things that they can do, and how to better protect themselves. And that's information that we have, expertise we have through not just the FBI, but some of our other law enforcement partners. And we're able to share information like that. In Dallas, we recently had a presentation that was on suspicious packages and IEDs. And they talked about a little bit about what happened in Austin and some of those suspicious packages and how businesses and people in those businesses will be able to recognize what those suspicious packages look like and understand that as a threat, right? So we're enhancing the safety of the public by giving them information so that they can behave in a different way that will really enhance their ability to stay safe. I know that Los Angeles has done presentations on unmanned aerial vehicles. Almost every one of these chapters are also talking about various different cyber threats and fraud schemes that will allow members to have not just increased their own personal safety, but to engage in more safe type behaviors in the workplace by better understanding those threats. We've also talked about counterterrorism and targeted violence, talking about a little bit about the mindset of the individuals who do commit targeted violence, and talking a little bit also about some of the signs that people may see that they may not recognize or associated with a person who is committed to targeted violence. I can also talk a little bit more about like criminal fraud schemes and healthcare. Technology change, how technology influences the law and law enforcement and what some of those challenges are, as well as some solutions for being able to overcome those challenges. So for us, we're really pushing the boundaries of where the FBI authorities end and really are empowering the members to be able to better defend themselves.
And these classes that you're referring to, I know I've been to the active shooter class several times with the different agencies, and they all seem to have, it's like this growing, I'm learning on the job type approach to it, because the different scenarios require different responses. But some of the other classes or educational opportunities that you're referring to, do you have any success stories for us? Can you, you know, tell us where it's, where this has made a difference in the lives of the people around you?
From Austin, with the Austin bombings that were going on down there, it was, I believe, an InfraGuard member who first started to see that there was some strange behavior by one of the people who was dropping off the packages. And because of the relationship that individual had with law enforcement, they knew who to call, they knew what things to look for, and said, hey, this is strange, this is out of the ordinary. And that's one that, you know, we recently just learned about. But we have just so many of these different success stories across the country. And the area where I'd say that we are a little bit on the weak side is that we don't do a very good job of sharing what those successes are and sharing that information. If I talked to another InfraGuard coordinator, they would have other examples of certain things that were their InfraGuard chapter relationships that they had were able to enhance investigations and on the larger scope in order to be able to enhance public safety and public health.
You know, I think you're right, because when I told people that InfraGuard's going to be on the radio show this week, they said, what's that? And I don't know how many times I told people InfraGuard's going to be on the radio, we're going to talk InfraGuard, and a majority of the people I spoke with didn't know what it was. And I just think getting the word out that, you know, you can be a part of the solution and learn these things from the FBI, from the Homeland Security, from the different resources that InfraGuard makes available, and, you know, get educated. Everybody needs to be educated on what's going on, because the only way we can protect ourselves is through organizations like this and being a part of the solution. And with that said, I'm going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a few.
You don't need to own a gun to make sure your children are trained and know what to do if they come across one. For the past 20 years, the folks at Diamondback have taught firearm safety and concealed weapon permit classes. Hi, I'm Ben Anderson, Director of Training at Diamondback Shooting Sports. Sign up for a class today at dbacktraining.com so you can be prepared for the unexpected. We're open 7 days a week, so stop in and introduce yourself. We're located in the Gaslight Plaza at the southwest corner of Broadway and Kolb on Tucson's east side.
Hi, it's me, Sherry. At Geneva Financial, we offer an array of loan products from commercial, construction, investor, all-in-one, a HEROES program for first responders as well as teachers, and of course, reverse mortgages. If you're shopping for a loan or know somebody who is, give me a call at 310-9900. We offer loans for humans by humans. So let's see what I can do for you. That's 310-9900. Thanks. I look forward to hearing from you.
You can join the Live Law Matters radio show every Saturday at 8 a.m. by calling in at 790-2040. We want to hear from you. For a schedule of future guests, go to lawmatters1030.org. And remember, your financial support will help continue the Law Matters mission so we can continue to support you. Tune in to Law Matters Saturdays at 8 a.m., streaming live at kvoi.com. On whatever device you listen to, AM 1030, The Voice.
911, what are you reporting?
I'd like to report a break-in into my car. I came out this morning and my laptop bag is gone and some of my books are gone.
Are any of the windows broken or anything like that?
Nothing's broken.
Did you leave your vehicle unlocked or did you lock it before you went inside?
I thought I locked it, but I don't think I did.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get an officer out to you as soon as I can.
This doesn't have to be you. Remember to lock it or lose it. This has been a message from the Marana Police Department.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are representing InfraGuard. We have Ellen Espinoza and FBI Special Agent Miguel Clark. They're calling in from Dallas, Texas. And I don't want you to think InfraGuard is just in Dallas, Texas. It's all over the country. And we have a chapter right here in Tucson as well. We kind of left off on the things that InfraGuard does and how the community can get involved. When I first joined InfraGuard, or was handed my card, I thought it was business-to-business relationships, but that's not necessarily the case. Ellen, could you tell us how individuals can get involved, qualify, what they have to do to become a member?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. So the process for joining InfraGuard is you actually go to the InfraGuard website, which is infraguard.org. So infraguard.org. On that website, which is run by the FBI, you can actually fill out an InfraGuard application. The membership requirements are pretty simple, actually. You must be a U.S. citizen, 18 years or older. You must be affiliated with some, you know, critical infrastructure, sort of one of the 16 that we talked about earlier. also consent to an FBI security risk assessment, which they do independently, also sign a non-disclosure agreement with the FBI. Put in your application, that goes over to FBI headquarters. They do their thing, if you will, their security check and such. And once you're accepted into the program, that gets pushed out to your local FBI field office. So if you reside in Tucson, for example, the Tucson office will receive a notification there, letting them know that they have a new InfraGuard member. And then that chapter reaches out to the member as well to welcome them. And you also receive then access to that secure InfraGuard portal that I mentioned earlier, where you're going to receive all sorts of notifications from the FBI, DHS, ISACs, and some of the other key partners as well that are able to post on there, and also join some of the very timely conversations in the forums where you get to collaborate, collaborate member to member, and as well as, get all the notifications from the FBI. And then from that point on, you're approved to go ahead and participate in the local chapter activities. And like I said, every chapter is different. They're all absolutely fantastic. We have fantastic volunteers across the country that are not paid. These are folks that put in, sometimes a lot of hours and a lot of energy into their chapters to helping reach out to the public and to the private sector and form that relationship with the FBI.
You say risk assessment. In other words, if your picture's hanging in a post office, don't bother applying, right?
That will probably throw up a red flag. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Miguel, what from the FBI side of this, what do they look for when they're qualifying members?
Well, one of the things we look at criminal history, and that's really a big determinant there. And from that, when we accept somebody as a member, we are basically letting other members know in some way, shape, or form that this new member is okay to interact with. And so we're looking for anything that comes up in that security assessment that will give an indication that, this person should not be allowed into our trusted members. So one of those aspects is definitely criminal history. Another one is just looking at seeing whether or not this individual has come into contact with the FBI before. And then how did that contact go? Was there an interview or was this person a victim? And how did they interact with us? Did they interact with us in a trustworthy manner, in a truthful manner? And if that's the case, we don't have any red flags from previous FBI or law enforcement interactions, then we will go ahead and we'll approve that person for membership. And then we also have some standards of conduct. We've had people who have violated standards of conduct, and then they've been removed and their accesses have been revoked. And that revocation, if it happens once, that's enough to have a person permanently be revoked from InfraGuard participation effectively for life.
I know since I've been a member for several years, I have received information that it's just really an insight on what we can do as citizens to be a part of the solution instead of, just sitting by and not doing anything. And it makes you more observant. You're looking at things in a different way. And you were talking about terrorism earlier. Next week on our show, we're going to have a retired FBI agent on, and the whole show is going to be focused on how to spot a terrorist, what to look for. And I think it's so important to be educated this way and, not to make people paranoid and, that type of person that's going to look at something and every little thing they see is a conspiracy theory, but just to be aware of your surroundings and know what you're looking at and be able to report it to the resources that you obviously provide in every area of the country. And I think that's something that's pretty incredible. I know I've gone to some of these classes and I've walked away and, it takes a couple hours to digest everything you just heard because you can't believe how in-depth some of the scenarios get. I'd like to talk about some of the success stories that InfraGuard has had. And Michael, can you address that? Is he gone?
Well, we have... No, I'm still here. There are a number of different ways really to look at this and to describe that. Some of them can be very profound, from InfraGuard members making a discovery of some sort that leads to us being able to solve a case, as what happened down in Austin. And other things can be much more subtle. For example, being able to find a member who is in a company and that company having been a victim of some type of a cybercrime or something along those lines, and being able to at least start the communication with somebody who's receptive to talking to the FBI. And so those little small successes are happening all over the country every single day, where we have people who are reaching out to us and telling us about certain different types of violations. I will speak not necessarily with regard to InfraGuard, but, you know, we have had a number of times where the public has reached out to us and given us indications that people were spying on their country, or that individuals were engaged in some type of activity that we were able to thwart before that happens, before something bad happens. And so InfraGuard for us, the success that we see is how the members really become eyes and ears for us and alert us to the things that we need to know. And sometimes they are, again, talking to us about emerging technologies, but more often than not, they're starting to tell us about how the threats are impacting the public sector, the private sector, I mean. And that is really insightful for us because it gives us an opportunity to be able to say, okay, we did not fully understand this threat and the impact that the threat was having on the private sector. And so maybe we need to increase our resources in order to better address that threat. And so they help us make a lot of program decisions about which directions to go with the resources that we have, because those resources, as you know, are limited.
Yes. And, you know, we don't like the false threats on, I think the ad was on earlier from the FBI saying, you know, the school threats, you were going to bomb a school or something. And it's just some kids think that's a joke. It's not a joke. You're wasting resources when it's, you know, a prank call. And that's why I say you don't want to be paranoid about things, but you really want to be educated on what to look for and how everybody can help everybody stay safe. And if you've got those resources and, you know, you're getting these messages from different companies, from, you know, like Homeland Security, the FBI, the local law enforcement agencies, that's going to help you be a better citizen. And I just feel very strongly about it. Ellen, can you tell us again how people can apply to be a member of InfraGuard?
Absolutely. So if you navigate to on the web, if you go to infraguard.org, and I'll spell it out again, infraguard.org, you'll see a button there that says apply. You can read more about the program as well prior to applying, but there is a button there where you can apply, and that is a secure site that is maintained by the FBI, and they will take your application and process it, and then, like I said earlier, reach out to you once they've made a decision.
Alan, what keeps you engaged? You've been a member for a long time. What keeps you engaged in InfraGuard?
That's a great question. So I will admit I'm certainly a patriot. I certainly grew up saluting the flag and being very proud to be American. I'm also very interested in protecting our country and protecting our businesses. You know, at the end of the day, I don't know, I won't speak for everyone, but I'll speak for myself that I believed that, number one, the government, whether it's the FBI or other agencies, that they, you know, they had this absolute sort of protective control over everything, and I needed to not worry about anything at all. They, you know, essentially they got it, and it's a done deal. Yeah. And that the private sector didn't play a role. That was actually my particular perspective. I didn't
Mine
think
too.
At all. You know, I don't know. You know, I thought FBI, I thought someone's scary, right? If they come visit me, it's not a good deal. It's not a good deal.
Some of them are.
If that's what's happening. But, you know, number one, I would say, you know, in meeting the agents, for me, that was quite honestly transformational. And that's kind of a little bit of the, if you will, the challenge I would put out to folks out there is get engaged, meet the agents, because when you start to meet folks face to face and get to know them and build that relationship, you're really going to see these are folks with a tremendous degree of integrity. and very focused and very dedicated. They're, I have to say, quite honestly, their dedication blows me away. You know, I meet people like Special Agent Clark on the phone here, who is extremely talented and experienced and could be working in private industry, perhaps making a lot more money, let's put it that way. But he's dedicated to the mission. And so for me, that was actually very transformative, is when I started, and this actually started back when I lived in New Jersey, started interfacing with that Newark field office there and getting to know folks. And I realized, wow, these are very dedicated people, that their interest really is protecting us at the end of the day. It's not protecting the government. That's not it. It's protecting us. And so,
so true.
You know, that really keeps me going. And I see it growing so much more and more. I mean, I've only been a member since 2002. And I mean, Miguel's been in the FBI way longer than that, for that matter. He could probably speak more to this. But even just in my time, I guess 17 years, it's been a radical change, you know, of the federal government, particularly in this case, the FBI being this, this entity that you don't really necessarily talk to unless something really bad is happening, to being folks that you have a relationship with. And so, you know, from a corporate perspective, I work in cybersecurity, and I'm constantly preaching, as you can imagine, InfraGuard to folks at various companies. And it's, hey, you know, their approach, and Miguel could talk more about this, but their approach is, the FBI does not come in and just all of a sudden, you know, if you had, let's say, a cyber intrusion, seize everything that you own, you know, and make it, you know, go on the news and talk about how such and such company experienced a breach. Not at all. You know, they're there to help. They're there to help you with the efforts of investigating as to, you know, why that intrusion, for example, and of course, not just cyber, it relates to every sector, but cyber in particular, why an intrusion occurred and who the threat actors were, et cetera. And so,
and how to fix it, how to protect yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So they don't come in to fix your issues per se. That's not kind of, you know, really their role. They're more in the investigative part of the process. But yeah, but they do offer best practices, and that's a great benefit as well to InfraGuard members, is that whether it's cyber or anything else, physical security, you know, and otherwise, are the awesome write-ups and papers and reports that the FBI and other partners put out through InfraGuard. To better inform, to your point, Sherry, as you said earlier, to better inform and to better protect.
Absolutely. And I remember 9/11. I remember seeing it on the TV. I had the TV muted because my son was still sleeping. And I thought it was a movie. And when I realized this is happening, I was like, what can I do? I felt so helpless. I want to do something, but I didn't know what to do. And even though you're not, you know, joining the military or the FBI, you're running, you know, to do that type of thing. Just as a citizen, as a single mom, I could have joined InfraGuard and been an active part of the solution. And I really look at InfraGuard as part of the solution, because you're educating people and giving them the resources and the knowledge to move forward in a more competent manner. Miguel, what keeps you involved with InfraGuard besides your boss told you to?
Well, for me, I've dedicated at least my career to what the mission is, and for us, that national security mission to ensure public health and safety. Whatever our role can be, my role in the FBI to maintain order and make sure that state and local governments are able to deliver essential public services. Also, just ensuring the orderly function of our economy, telecommunication, energy, access to financial services and transportation services. I actually enjoy doing those types of things. For me, seeing how the world has changed, you know, we used to have an idea that, you know, much like you and Alan were saying, that the government could do it all on our own, and we just can't. And helping my organization better understand what that means as we start to really move into the reality of the fact that helping our country's economic security is exactly the same as national security.
It is. Absolutely it is. And I'm really happy that you guys agreed to come on the show today, because I've trying to explain InfraGuard, even I today have learned a few things. To people who don't know what it is, it's been a challenge for me, because you think private sector, you know, everybody has their own thing that they're doing. And this isn't just you. It's everybody involved, everybody's information. If you've experienced something, tell your neighbor, tell somebody so that they can watch for it in case it's, you know, like a computer hack or something. It's important. It's important to know all these things and be able to share it. So, Alan, tell us again, how do they apply? And are there fees for applying? Do you pay to be a member of InfraGuard?
So, no. So the InfraGuard program itself, which, again, you know, like Miguel mentioned that sort of at the top of the show, is a program that, you know, it belongs to the FBI, you know, the National Members Alliance that I'm on the board of. We, you know, sort of augment that and help collaborate. But the InfraGuard program itself from the FBI, there is no charge. They do not charge for anything membership related at all. So you can go on infraguard.org, infraguard.org, and there's an apply button there. You can click on the application, fill that out, submit it. Absolutely no charge for that. Some of the chapters, some of the members alliances do collect membership dues and donations and such, typically not very high at all. But just to help support the chapter, I could just give you an example, because, again, I'm intimately involved with them. But the Dallas chapter, for example, will ask for a donation of $20 a year, which I think is very reasonable, to help support the organization, because every chapter has, you know, they're putting on events, and whether they're providing, you know, coffee and water or in some cases actually getting a very high caliber speaker to come and speak, you know, they're needing those funds. So, yeah.
I know we've had some speakers come in from all over the country and talk to us and educate us about different topics. And it's always worth my time to go. I'll take day off of work and go, because I know what they have to say is going to help me be a better citizen. And I want everybody out there to go to infraguard.org and apply. And how long does it typically take for the FBI, Miguel, for the FBI to clear somebody?
On the short end, it can take as few as about 6 weeks. And on the longer end, some of those applications take a little bit longer to get through, because if there's anything that you see in that security risk assessment that you have questions about, then you have to really arrange for like a telephone interview with the member. So on the long end, you know, it can take up to 4 to maybe even 6 months. We've done a lot of work to streamline that process and try to get that time frame down to something that's a little bit more reasonable.
Is FBI hiring?
The FBI is hiring. They're in the midst of a hiring push right now where they're trying to hire, I think that the target for this year is like 1,100 or 1,200 special agents. And then we also have other positions that we're hiring for, intelligence analysts and professional staff positions as well. So, yes, you can go to FBI jobs and you can check out whatever vacancies there might be.
So FBIjobs.gov? What's the email?
I believe it is FBIjobs.gov, yes.
Okay. And so if you want to be a special agent, and if you're a regular staff member, you don't get to carry a gun. But if you want to carry a gun, they're going to call you special. So be a special agent.
They will.
So I appreciate both of you coming on the show. I know there's a time difference, and you took some time to be with me today and hopefully educate the people in Southern Arizona, and hopefully we'll get some new members. And if they go in there and apply, do they automatically get put into a chapter, or do they pick a chapter? Alan?
Yes. So that's done based upon the home address that you input. So whatever your home address is, that'll be the chapter that you're aligned with.
Okay. I want to thank both of you for coming on today. I appreciate you educating us. And I want to remind everybody, go to Facebook, plug in Bark for the Blue, so we can sell calendars to help buy equipment for our canine unit so that they can have little jackets to protect them so dirtbags don't start stabbing our dogs like they did a couple of weeks ago. And you okay? Okay. Thank you both for coming on. And until next week, we're going to talk terrorism next week. Until then, shop local and stay safe.
Copyright 2019 Geneva Financial, LLC, NMLS number 42056. All loans subject to qualifying factors. Not all applicants will qualify. Equal housing lender. AZBK number 0910215.